All right, welcome everybody to this webinar. We have Field Coordinator Tom Rice, and we have John McManus, President Emeritus of the John Birch Society, and Tom covers a lot of states. I'm not sure I can name them correctly, so Tom, if you would. I think a lot of these people you probably already know personally, but just for everybody so they know where you work.
Yes, I cover all of Ohio. I live in Columbus, Ohio, central Ohio. I cover all of Ohio, all of Indiana, all of Michigan, and western Pennsylvania.
Very good, very good. And John McManus, he is with us from Massachusetts, recently named Massachusetts. So welcome, Mr. McManus.
Pleasure to be with you.
And just so everybody knows, I am the field coordinator in South Carolina, Georgia, and North Carolina. I live in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I am the stage manager this evening to help Tom Rice do this, because we really want to get as many members possible on these webinars that we're doing. And so I'm not going to be participating very much. Tom and John will be doing most of the talking. But if you do have questions, type them in the Q&A section or in the chat section, and I will help to get them asked. And anyways, the topic today is local police and the John Birch Society versus the United Nations. And so let's just go ahead and start there. And we already have a question, but I'll go ahead and let you do an intro, Tom, and talk about what members should be doing to support local police right now.
Okay, well, let me, I was looking at the resume of John McManus. It's very impressive. He's a graduate of Holy Cross College. He's got a Bachelor of Science degree in physics. He served 3 years as an officer in the United States Marine Corps. Later on, he was an electronics engineer. In 1966, he started to work for the John Birch Society, served in a variety of positions. In 1991, he was named president of the John Birch Society, and he currently serves as president emeritus of the John Birch Society. He's the longtime publisher of the New American Magazine and the author of five books. Those five books are The Insiders, Financial Terrorism, Changing Commands, William F. Buckley Jr., Pied Piper for the Establishment. And his latest book is The John Birch Society, Its History Recounted by Someone Who Was There. And Jack, I'm going to go ahead and display this book. This is your latest book, once again, on the John Birch Society, Its History Recounted by Someone Who Was There. Can you tell us a little bit about this book?
Well, I can remember being at a meeting of the senior officers of the John Birch Society. And all of a sudden, CEO Art Thompson interrupted what he was talking about and said, you know, we need a history of the John Birch Society, and Jack, we need you to write it. That's how I got started. And that, the book is, 480 pages, I think, and it took quite a while to go over all of the history of the society, and I was reminded of a lot of things that I'd forgotten as I did that. But I didn't join the Birch Society until 1964. And when I joined the Birch Society, I said to myself, I'll never catch up with these guys who were already in the society and had read many of the books. But I guess I managed to catch up a little bit and then contribute to the book writing. I still have copies of the book available, and I've lowered the price. If anybody's interested, they can get a copy from me for $20, cash or check, check made out to me, and sent to John McManus, Post Office Box 3076 in Wakefield, Massachusetts, 01880. $20 covers the price of the book and mailing and packaging. So every one of these webinars that I've been on, I've sold several books. So anybody who doesn't yet have the book should have it, because if you're a member of the Birch Society, you want to know what has happened over the years in the society. And it's quite a story.
Well, it's quite a book and very well written. You were there, and the title of this book, "Your Standing," and Robert Welch, the founder of the John Birch Society, is at his desk. And once again, a very, very good book. Jack, we'll ask you to give that that address and the particulars regarding this book before we conclude our
before
meeting.
Before you hold the book up, Tom, you'll notice that I'm kind of laughing. And Robert Welch is looking at me and about to start laughing. And people have asked me, well, what were you laughing about? Well, I told Mr. Welch, I had just come back from speaking at one of the colleges in the Boston area, and I demanded combat pay. and he finally understood what I was saying and laughed. And he said, I'm sorry, we don't have that category of pay. But it got kind of rough in some of those examples, some of those schools. They were loaded with leftists, even in the 60s. But this photo was taken, I believe, in the early 1970s.
Okay. Very, very interesting. We're going to be talking tonight, Jack, about both the United Nations and the riots and the John Birch Society's program, Support Your Local Police. Do you want to comment a little bit about the United Nations? Now, I know the John Birch Society started in the early 1960s, starts the educational project, Get Us Out of the United Nations. Why was this started?
Well, it was started because right from day one, the United Nations started gathering influence over sovereign states, and it ended up being pretty much in charge of a lot of the things that go on at the state level. I had the copy of the United Nations Charter here in this pile of stuff, but I don't know that I can find it recently. Well, anyway, our country was founded on a belief in God. Men are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and to secure these rights, governments are instituted. That's the purpose of the government, protect the God-given rights of every American. Okay. You go to the United Nations, there's no God, none at all. And the United Nations wants you to believe that the rights that you have are a gift of the United Nations. In the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the United Nations actually says that you have this right, you have that right, you have this other right, except if we pass a law that says you don't, right? The difference couldn't be any further. Now, what happened, I personally believe World War II was fought to make the people want a United Nations, right? We fought and won World War I, and within less than three decades, we were back in war again in World War II. In fact, it was only two decades. So at the end of the war, the attitude about the United Nations was, look, we had World War I, we had World War II, we don't want to have World War III. Let's give this new idea a chance. Right? My own dad, I was 10 years old, 1945. My own dad, who was a very patriotic American, he got sucked in on that argument. He said, yeah, let's give it a chance. So we joined the United Nations. The vote in the United States Senate was 89 in favor of joining the United Nations and only two against. And of course, everybody knows who the two are, right? Everybody's heard of William Langer of North Dakota and Henrik Schibsted of Minnesota. Yeah. Not really. Maybe you have, Tom, but not too many other people have heard of them. Even Robert Taft, much as I revere Robert Taft, I think he was a great American. He got sucked in on this. And it was about 2 years later, he said, I made a mistake. The United Nations is a trap. We got to get out. We got to go it alone. That was his phrase. We got to go it alone. So he regretted that he had voted for it. He tried to keep us out of NATO in 1949. NATO was a subsidiary, has always been a subsidiary of the United Nations. We fought our wars under NATO command. They went to President Truman when he sent troops to Korea in 1950. Where are you getting the authority to do this? It's not in the Constitution. You're supposed to have a declaration of war and so forth. Truman's response was very simple. If I can send troops to Europe under NATO, I can send troops to Korea the same way. He didn't mention NATO at the time, but that's the authority he was citing. And so what happened there? Well, we actually won the war twice in Korea, and both times it was taken away. So the country was finally split in half, and we exist in Korea still in a state of war. There's never been an end of the Korean War. And 50,000 Americans died, a lot more, many more injured and so on. But they won the war. You can go back and look at some of the generals that fought in that war, Stratemeyer and, I can't remember all the names, but they said we weren't allowed to win. And of course, Douglas MacArthur was the commander of our military. He wanted to bomb the bridges over the Yalu River so that the Chinese communists couldn't come across into North Korea. He was denied permission to do that. He later said that never before had he been so restricted in conducting military operations. Excuse me. I meant to get a glass of water. I didn't do it.
You know, Jack, it was interesting. You mentioned the quote from President Harry Truman. As you recall, in early 1991, when President George H.W. Bush was gearing up for the Persian Gulf War in January of 1991, some of the United States senators were saying to President Bush, you know, don't we need a declaration, a congressional declaration of war? And President George H.W. Bush said, not really. And he told the senators, he said, I don't need to have your consent or the House of Representatives. I've gone to a higher authority, referring, of course, to the United Nations. Now, I noticed, Jack, you just said that you were looking for the Charter of the United Nations, looking for the Charter of the United Nations on your desk there. Who is the author of the United Nations Charter?
Well, one of the main authors was Alger Hiss, an American who was a communist. And he later went to prison for lying about the fact that he wasn't a communist, right? And I remember writing one of my columns in the old Birchlog series about his, because there was a professor here at one of the colleges in Massachusetts who decided that he was going to do the research and he was going to show how Alger Hiss had been framed, that Alger Hiss was really a true American and that he never should have gone to prison. Well, the guy was honest enough after he'd done the research to change his mind and say, yeah, he was guilty, right? So I wrote a column about that. I got a call from my son one time. He was at the University of New Hampshire, only a little bit short ride from where we live here in Massachusetts. And he called me and he said, Daddy, you're sitting down. I said, what did you do now? He said, no, I didn't do anything. I just want to tell you who's coming to the campus to speak here at our school. I said, okay, who is it? He said, Alger Hiss. I said, Alger Hiss is coming to the University of New Hampshire, right? This is back in the early 70s, right? So, or the late 70s. So anyway, we had two carloads of members of the Birch Society got together. We went up and we spaced ourselves all around the hall. It came time for a question. And one of the questions was by a Bircher who was a cab driver in Boston, and he looked like a cab driver in Boston, but he was a very bright guy, he'd done a lot of reading, and he asked a couple of very penetrating questions of Alger Hiss. Well, we had passed out a copy, we brought 500 copies of my article about Hiss and the professor who had written this book about him, saying yes, indeed, he was a communist, and we went down the aisle and handed somebody 8 or 10 of them, say, please take one and pass it in, take one and pass it in, and so forth. Everybody in the place had a copy of the article that I'd written on Hiss. So the meeting turned out to be a bust for Alger Hiss, And some of the students got a little bit of a taste of the fact that they were being asked to go ahead. And I guess it's true, it came back to me that some of the professors who were there, who were very pro-his, and probably knew who he was and what he was, they got their classes together after the meeting to say that that propaganda from the John Birch Society is false and disreputable, blah, 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 you know. But anyway, we took a step forward for the Birch Society at the time.
And, you know, it's interesting, it's just not the John Birch Society. You look at Whitaker Chambers, his book, Witness, and then in the late 1970s, Professor Alan Weinstein, the book entitled Perjury. Prove the guilt of Alger Hess. And years ago, and Jack, I think probably the two of us would be the only two who would remember the old John Birch Society. The postcards, the picture on the postcard was the building of the United Nations, and the title of the postcard was The House That Hess Built.
The House That Hess Built, exactly. Alger Hess could easily have been the president of the United States. He had done everything that was asked of him by the liberal intelligentsia, by the crypto communists that were in our government and so forth. He was the secretary general of the founding conference of the United Nations. He's the man that took the charter after it was completely signed in San Francisco by some 50 odd nations. And he brought it back to Washington to give it to the United States Senate for their ratification. There's something about that whole business that I always questioned, and that was, why did just the United Nations, the Senate, get a chance to vote on the United Nations? Why didn't the House of Representatives have something to say about it? And nobody's ever answered that question, except to say that, well, it was really a treaty. A treaty is between equals. A treaty is between two sovereign entities. There was no sovereign entity, the United Nations, before they started it by the passage of the 89-2 vote. So I've maintained that we ought to put up a statue of Henrik Schibsted of Minnesota and William Langer of North Dakota. I read their speeches. In fact, I've quoted them numerous times in Birch Society publications. They were right on. They talked about the fact that our military would now be a puppy dog for the United Nations. They didn't use that term, but that's what they meant. Article 25 of the Charter of the United Nations says that the United Nations can command the troops of the United, of the different countries. Article 25. And, I've asked people, would you have accepted that? No. I said, well, our Senate did. I had an interesting thing happen too. A man who was a native of the town that I lived in, Wakefield, Massachusetts, he became the four-star general, and he was the commander of NATO stationed in Europe. And after he retired, he came back for a visit to his former hometown. They named a school after him and so on. And I went to the meeting and they asked if anybody had any questions. And I said, General, do you have any regrets that we have bypassed the requirement in the Constitution to have a declaration of war before we go to war? We didn't declare war in Korea or Vietnam and so on. And I wonder if you have any regrets about that. Well, he kind of muddled a little bit, and then he finally said, no, I don't have any problem with that. Well, he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which figured, right?
Sure.
A good Irish Catholic boy from Massachusetts named Galvin. And he sold this country out for an extra star. He had a four-star rating, and it's just criminal what has happened. So now we see the United Nations making all kinds of moves towards influencing local police here in our country. And what they want to do is set up a United Nations police force to police the world. and that would be a hell on earth.
Well, let's get into that now, Jack. You bring up a good point with the riots and that are taking place right now in this country, and you know, tying that in with the United Nations. I'm just curious, and I want you to sort of segue into the riot situation. But with the United Nations, are they advocates of disarmament?
Absolutely. Absolutely, disarmament. They've come out with programs that call for every country and every citizen to turn over his weapons to the United Nations so that the United Nations would be the only armed forces on Earth. And boy, would that be dangerous.
Yes.
That would be incredibly dangerous. And there's a program that came out of the State Department. State Department document, what's it, 7277? The United Nations take over all military. And I see Tom's reaching for a copy.
Yes. Yeah, let me hold it up. And this came out, what, as I recall, Jack, 1961, didn't it?
Yes, it did. As soon as it came out, there was somebody in Washington, it was printed by the government printing office. Somebody in Washington knew enough to send a copy to Robert Welch, who was the leader and the founder of the John Birch Society. And Robert Welch looked through it and was aghast, but not terribly surprised. And so he wrote to the State Department and he said, could you send me 100 copies of that? And they did. And then another 100, and then another 100. And finally, it was out of print. And so Robert Welch said, well, it's a government document and it's not a secret document. And we can print it ourselves. So we printed it up and we have printed tens of thousands of this United Nations program for general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world. Not just the disarmament of military forces, the disarmament of everybody. At the end of the document that Tom's holding up here, we find that at the end of it, it says that all military weaponry will be in the hands of the United Nations and nobody else.
And Jack, as I recall, this is still in effect, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I can remember calling down to the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency in Washington that no longer exists. And I got one of the executives of that. And I said, is State Department document 7277, is that still in force? Is that still on the books? And the individual I called said, absolutely, yes, it is. And he was very happy about that. And I said, well, thank you very much. And I didn't tell him who I was. I didn't have to. If he had asked me, I would have told him. But I just wanted to get verification from him that indeed it was still in force. So there it is.
Very, very interesting. Now, Jack, you know, let's get into this, the rioting situation, and support your local police, the project of the John Birch Society. But let me hit you with this hypothetical scenario. If the riots continue in this country and the riots actually escalate in this country, could the United Nations vote to send United Nations troops into the United States to secure order, to restore order? Could that happen?
It certainly could happen. And I don't think there would be a vote in the UN to do it. I think what would happen is that some of our liberal internationalist senators and congressmen would beg them to do it. You know, please send the troops, send the United Nations forces here. We need help. Now, maybe you've seen Seattle, Washington's been under state of emergency for a long time now, ever since the murder of George Floyd. And they've now voted to cut their budget for the police department in half. And there were several members of the city council there in the Seattle area who wanted to abolish funding the police completely. Happily, you got a little attention from the chief of police there in Seattle, a female, and she resigned her position. She said, I won't have my name associated with any of this craziness that's being suggested and so forth. And she talked about they've actually made it impossible for us police to do the job that we're supposed to do by cutting our budget in half. And so she bailed out. I don't know what's going to happen now there, but you could have the same thing happen in Portland. You could have it happen in Chicago. You've got lawlessness there. And if the police should happen to shoot a few looters, be they black or white, there'll probably be some cries for, we need federal help, or we need even United Nations help. And now, so then you have to go back and you have to say to yourself, well, who's financing this? Who's behind getting these rioters together, supplying them with what they need? What was interesting is when they had some disturbances down in Washington, D.C., there was some loads of bricks that had been delivered to the spot where the riot was going to be. And then the trucks left the bricks and took off. Somebody paid for those bricks to be there so that the rioters would have bricks and they could throw them through the windows, or they could throw them against a door or whatever. Who's paying for all this? Well, you have to look back and you see a man named George Soros. George Soros is a Hungarian native, a billionaire who has made a lot of money on stock transactions and so forth. And he's about as left-wing as you possibly can be. And he's financing all kinds of things. He finances Antifa, that's the anti-fascist group. He finances Black Lives Matter. He finances this other stuff. So we're really at war within our own country, and most Americans just kind of shrug it off and say, oh, it'll stop, it'll go away, and so forth. Every little bit that does happen makes it harder for the American system to continue. And that's what the goal is.
So the goal being a national police force. Jack, are you of the opinion that the leadership element of Antifa, and they're essentially what, anarchist, and the leadership element of Black Lives Matter, they're Marxist, are these paid professional revolutionaries?
Well, I can't prove that, but I can't imagine that a lot of these people would do it without getting paid for something. You know, let me make a very easy point for people to understand. Local police, you like. If you're in a community and you have a local police force, you can walk down the street, you see a cop standing on the corner, you go up and you chat with him. How's your day going? How you doing? You might even know his children, because your children go to the same school that his children go to. And you know he lives in the community or he lives nearby, and he has the interests of the community at heart, right? That's a very nice situation. But you go to a place where there's a national police force. Well, let's talk about the KGB in the Soviet Union. All right, you're a Russian citizen. You leave your home. You start walking downtown. You see a KGB agent on the street corner. Sometimes it's hard to tell if he's usually dressed as a civilian. But if you see him and you know he's KGB, you don't go up to him and ask him how his day is. You turn around and you go back home. Right? And you wait till he gets out of there so that you can proceed. It's just like night and day. Local police are good. They're wonderful. What we want is the local police to continue with the sometimes difficult work that they do. We're glad to have them. And if you see a local policeman in your community, go up and thank them. Tell them you're rooting for them and that you're trying to get other people to understand the importance of maintaining local control over him.
So, Jack, you would be of the opinion that these allegations of police brutality and systemic racism in America, you know, for the most part, those are bogus allegations, aren't they?
Well, there are cases where a rogue policeman goes nuts. He oversees what he's supposed to do, and it is then stated that this is the way all policemen act. No. So, you know, any employer is going to have a couple of people that he wants not to employ anymore. Same goes with policemen. But to say that that the police in the United States are systemic criminals, that they will do to everybody what's been done in a couple of instances, it's just a complete falsehood. The police, they want local control over them just as much as we do in the John Birch Society. But people don't understand when they say, they see our support your local police, they don't understand the importance of the word local. And that's part of the job of a member of the Birch Society to let that be known. We added to it and keep them independent. So the slogan is now a little bit larger than it was when we first started.
You bring up a good point. And for those of you who are members of the John Birch Society who are listening to this podcast, I would encourage you, I'm going to challenge you to do this. This issue, the July 6th issue of the New American Magazine, what's really behind the riots, and look at that sign that this individual is holding up. Save a life, kill a cop. How repugnant. But yeah, this issue of the New American Magazine is an excellent educational piece on the issue of the need to support your local police, keep them independent, you know, who's behind the riots. It talks about Black Lives Matter, Antifa, George Soros, the people who finance these riots. Well, what we want you to do is to buy a bunch of these. We want you to distribute these magazines along with the newest Alex Newman DVD. And this is in the August bulletin, the August John Birch Society bulletin. And what's really behind the riots and police reform.
Tom, you didn't mention the fact that the New American Magazine is a John Birch Society publication.
Well, of course.
You know that. And, you know.
I think probably everybody else, but you were the publisher of the New American Magazine.
Well, we can't be sure that everybody realizes that, you know.
Okay. They're aware of it now. Thank you, Jack.
Right.
We appreciate that clarification.
Let me just say that the magazine is peerless. There's nothing like it. And happily, more and more people are beginning to realize that. Some of the columnists that write for this publication or that and so forth always told me over the years, your magazine is far and away the best. There was a wonderful good American down in Washington named Howard Phillips. You'd remember that name, Tom.
Sure.
Howie and I got very friendly. And every time I saw Howie, he said, your magazine is by far the best. No doubt about it. It's the only one I read cover to cover. Most of the other magazines that come, I just skim through them and occasionally read an article here or there. But you guys don't pull any punches. You tell it the way it is. You're right on target. And I'm very grateful for the existence of the New American Magazine.
Outstanding publication. What we're encouraging all of you members and even non-members of the John Birch Society to do, folks, is to order from John Birch Society headquarters in Appleton, Wisconsin, copies of the July 6th issue of the New American Magazine, along with the new Alex Newman DVD. We want you to distribute these to police chiefs, to sheriffs, to your state senators, to your state representatives, your mayors, your city council members, and to other people who we call opinion molders. People in the community like your pastors, radio talk show hosts, business owners and business and professional people. So please do make a note to do exactly that. Jack, I want to talk a little bit. We're going to open it up here in a little bit for questions and answers from the members of our audience. But Jack, the influence of the John Birch Society is growing. The number of people joining the John Birch Society is increasing. For example, the John Birch Society's online curriculum, the Freedom Project Academy, the enrollment stats for the start of the 2020 school year, they are actually up 58% over last year. But I know, you know, you wanted to comment a little bit about the John Birch Society, and you're still the president emeritus of the John Birch Society. Jack, give us your remarks, please.
Well, what has happened with the coronavirus threat and so forth, and it really is a threat. It's not so much a medical threat as it is a freedom threat, in my view. I wrote a piece way back months ago, and I said, look, here we have so many people have died. Well, let's use a figure, 80,000. 80,000 people have died they say, from coronavirus. That's the same number of the people who died from flu 2 years ago during the flu season, right? And then we find out that all kinds of chicanery going on about making sure that the death certificate on this person says that he or she died of the coronavirus, when she died of diabetes, or she died of pneumonia that she had, or she died of something else, and so on. And then we find out that the government actually pays a small amount of money to a survivor of somebody who died, but they pay double the amount if it's a coronavirus death. So they're setting it up so that people will want to have people who are died classified as being victims of the pandemic. There's a lot of that kind of thing going on, and it is terribly wrong. Then we find out in a more recent issue of the New American Magazine that the substance hexachloroethane, I have trouble saying it.
It's only got 50 letters in it, Jack.
Yeah, too many letters in it, right. The stuff that Donald Trump actually mentioned it and says that he takes it and so forth. There's a remarkable story, Tom, and you must know about this. A lady in Michigan, a state representative up there, she contracted the disease, and she was getting close to death when she heard President Trump talking about this on the television. So she asked the doctors to give her some of this stuff, and it cured her. And so she said, well, she's going to vote for Donald Trump. And she's a black lady, and she's a member of the state legislature. Now she's worried about the fact that because she said she's going to vote for Donald Trump, that she might lose her seat in the state legislature. Well, if somebody saved my life the way Trump saved her life, I'd vote for Trump too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyhow. Yeah.
You know, about a week ago, we had chatted, we were chatting about the John Birch Society. You made the comment to me. You said it sort of irritates you at times to hear the question being asked, is the John Birch Society still around?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that does happen. I've had that happen, and I think a lot of our members have had it happen. So sometimes members of the society, maybe somebody getting ready to ask me a question here on this program, what is it that the John Birch Society needs most? And my answer is it needs visibility. It needs members of the society getting together and buying space at the county fair, or a street fair, or a parade, or some way to get the name of the John Birch Society in front of the public. People will come up and they'll want to know, oh, you're still around. Oh, well, what do you know? What are you pushing now? And you got an array of materials. Maybe you give some away. Maybe you ask it for a donation and so on. That's visibility. And that pays off remarkably. We got one of your colleagues, a coordinator over in New Jersey. He and his members put on 65 of those meetings, street fairs, county fairs, parades, whatever, every year. And he has told me year after year, there are always some people who come up to the booth where they are and say, you know, I've been watching you people over the years. You're still at it. And I've picked up some of the literature. I've read through some of your literature and so forth. And I think I ought to join the Birch Society. How do I do that? All right. Visibility. It really hurts me. It hurts me deeply for people to say to me, are you folks still around? Or what is the John Birch Society? You know, we grew the most remarkable period of growth in the history of the Birch Society was in the early 60s when we were being attacked on a daily basis. Every nasty thing you could possibly think of was being said about the Birch Society. They're a bunch of crackpots, they're kooks, they're anti-Semites, they're ridiculous. They're conspiracy theorists and so on and so on. And they repeated it over and over and over again, and we grew. And we grew. I love to tell a story about the California State Fact-Finding Committee on Un-American Activities. They had their own group there in California, and they actually took on the job of investigating the Birch Society to see if all of these charges against the Birch Society had any merit. Well, Tom's got a copy of the report. Well, what happened is they actually spent 2 years trying to understand the Birch Society. They hired people and told them clandestinely to go and join the Birch Society, find out what really goes on at those meetings that they have and so forth. And those people found out that we had nothing to hide. We had a new member, right? And some of those people who were assigned by that committee, after the job was done and they were no longer doing that job for the California investigators, they stayed as members of the Birch Society. They were glad to have been introduced to the society the way they were. So this report came out in 1963, and in 63, they said the society has been accused of this and this and this and this. We have not found any of those accusations to be have any merit. And Robert Welch was thrilled. He said there is still some honesty in the United States of America. And incidentally, that was a Democrat-controlled committee in California, and they put out a very favorable report about the John Birch Society. They didn't like everything they saw. They wish we hadn't done this, they wish we hadn't done that. But overall, they said they not only have a right to exist, we're pretty glad they do exist. You know, that's my words, not theirs.
And you know, if people want verification, Jack, to what you were just talking about, they can go to the John Birch Society's website, jbs.org, and just work your way to the California report, and you can actually read the investigation and the conclusions from this committee back in June of 1963. So something I'll challenge all of our JBS members, John Birch Society members, to do is to reach out and to recruit. An excellent educational tool we have is this 29-minute video, once again done by Mr. McManus years ago, entitled Overview of America. It helps to lay the foundation for what Americanism and the Constitution is all about. Show your prospects this DVD, and then ask them to join the John Birch Society. Evan, I want to turn it over to you, and I think probably we have some questions that people would like to pose to Jack McManus. Evan, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, Jonathan, he asked, we're grappling with the systematic racism issue in our community relative to our police department. Compounding the issue, we are without a police chief at the moment. City leaders have delayed the appointment of a new chief.
Where is this?
Jonathan, would you please type in the area where you live, or if you want to speak, just let me know.
It's Beechwood, Ohio.
Beechwood, Ohio. So you know.
Beechwood, Ohio.
Oh, he typed it in here. Okay. So there's no police chief. He says, I'd be interested in feedback on as well as the declaring racism a public health crisis matter. So he wants feedback on this, and he wants a discussion on declaring racism a public health crisis matter. So anyways, go ahead, guys.
Racism exists in the minds of a few people. It certainly exists in the minds of a lot of black people. You know, I get a little bit itchy about the fact they say they want equality. They come out with Black Lives Matter. Well, what about white lives? Shouldn't the word be all lives matter, not just black lives? And if you say all lives matter to some Black Lives Matter person who's pushing that idea, then he'll get upset at you and call you a racist. No, you're not a racist for saying you want all lives to matter. No, so there are people actively working to divide America, and the Birch Society has done a commendable job over the years in uniting Americans. In my job as the public relations director and then the president of the John Birch Society, going back over more than 30 years of my time in the staff. I don't know how many times I've been on radio shows where the moderator or some call-in would say, well, do you have black members? I said, yes, we do. How many? I said, I don't know. We don't ask that on the application blank for membership. Well, do you have Jewish members? And I say, yes. How many? I said, I don't know. I know that a Jewish member and several of them that are good friends of mine and remain good friends of mine would say, look, if you hear this anti-Semitic charge and you need some help from somebody who is Jewish in the John Birch Society, give me a call. I'll do what I can to put it down. I know it's not true. So sometimes these nasty adjectives stick. But again, it only happens when the John Birch Society is more visible. I'll never forget doing a radio show, I think it was in Miami area. And we had talked about this kind of thing before they opened it up for questions from the listeners. And all of a sudden, the first guy who called in, who they acknowledged, he said, I want to let you know I'm angry. And I said, uh-oh, here we go. Here we go. We've been talking about the Birch Society. I said, well, what are you angry about? He said, what I'm angry about is not about the John Birch Society, but about the fact that what the John Birch Society is saying and nobody else seems to be saying it. And you're absolutely right. And that makes me angry that I have to go to a radio show and listen to a man from the John Birch Society to straighten me out about some very important matters regarding our country. Wonderful things like that have happened over the years. And again, it's visibility. I certainly will help anybody. You get me on a radio show, I'd be happy to do it. I do it all the time. I'm still doing it. And it's a pleasure to represent the John Birch Society. And it's been a long time since I had a question that hadn't been asked of me before.
Mike Bordner asks, since many events are canceled or curtailed due to the actions of our governor, where would ideal places be to set up a table or booth? He also asks, does
up a table outside the main post office in town, right? On the sidewalk. And just get, just talk to people. Would you like to know a little bit more about the John Birch Society? Ask them if they realize that our troops have been in Afghanistan now 19 years, and it's been a United Nations operation, and they never tell us that.
So explain that to everybody. How so we can set up a booth in front of the post office?
Well, you can set it up in front of a supermarket. That matter actually went to the Supreme Court of the United States. And the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that anybody can, with good taste, set up a booth and have their information distributed to anybody who's going in and out of the supermarket. Mm-hmm. If you need something like that, Evan or Tom, I can send you some newspaper articles talking about the fact that had been ruled. That is perfectly all right for, well now, so what you do is you go and you ask to see the manager of the supermarket. And you say, look, here's what I want to do. And if the guy balks on it, say, well, you can't stop me. I have this newspaper article talking about the court case that certified that everybody has permission to do this. And I don't want to cause an eruption here, but I just want to let you know that we'd like to do this. So okay. Not only can the Salvation Army or the Boy Scouts or whatever set up a table and so forth, the Birch Society can as well.
Right. It's a great idea. He also asked, does social media presence work well to educate?
Well, it gets people to do some thinking, and it gets the kind of people we want in the Birch Society to ask for more information, right? That's the best thing you do with a booth at the supermarket or at the county fair or something like that. You're not going to sign up people. You will rarely. You'll get somebody who may have been watching you for a couple of years at some of these events, who, as I mentioned, will sign up. But what you want to do is you want to get people to do some thinking, right? Do you know that the organized forces behind the rioting in the streets is being paid for by people who are out and out Marxists? They are? I didn't know that. They don't tell me that on television. I said, well, that's part of our problem in this country. People rely on television to find out what's really going on, and they shouldn't, right? It's pretty much controlled.
Three more questions left. Let's see here. We just had another question come in. Okay, we'll try to do four more questions. We just have a few minutes left. Could you provide, this is written by Ruth Ann Wagner. Could you provide a brief update on Charlie Smith and Izola Foster, two inspiring speakers on the JBS Speakers Bureau I remember from years past? Their message is even more timely today.
Izola Foster retired as a school teacher from Los Angeles. She and her husband moved to the Las Vegas area, and she recently passed away. Charlie Smith was from Pittsburgh. He was one of my most popular speakers for quite a long time. And I don't know what Charlie's doing today. I lost contact with him, and I don't know that he keeps in contact with anybody in the Bird Society. And he's on an age now. He's probably close to my age, which is the mid-80s. Tom's area is Ohio and some of the surrounding states there. One of the most famous Black members that we had who did such marvelous, marvelous work for us over the years was Mrs. Julia Brown. Julia Brown lived in the Cleveland area. And in the early 1960s, she went to a meeting of people that were talking about getting better treatment for the Blacks. And she was interested in that, of course. And she found out after going to a couple of meetings that she had joined the communist movement. And when she found that out, she was very angry. And she went to the FBI and she told them, I didn't want to join the Communist Party, but I found out that I had done so. And I wanted you to know that this is what's going on. And she got up to walk out, and the FBI agent said to her, Mrs. Brown, don't leave. I want to talk to you further. And asked her if she would continue to go to the communist meetings and report on what they're doing. And she did that for 9 long years at very great danger to her own self. She finally was asked to be the star witness at a trial of the communist leaders. And she verified the fact that, yes, indeed, they were communists and so forth. And they all went to prison. And she had to leave Cleveland. Her life was threatened and so on. But then she became a member of the Birch Society, and she was a tremendously good force in putting down the nonviolent riots. Right? Martin Luther King and his people always said that they were dealing in nonviolence, but they actually stated that they wanted violence so that it would lead to more legislation. So Some of King's lieutenants would go to a community and they'd say, we're going to have a parade here. We're going to flush out the racists and the this and the that and so forth. And they were quite successful in doing that. But all of a sudden, people would get advance notice that King and his lieutenants were going to inundate the town and start their violent campaign, calling it nonviolence. And they would call, the people would call the Birch Society, can you send Mrs. Brown down here? So Mrs. Brown would go down and she'd give a talk to a massive audience, 300, 400, 500 people, half white, half Black, and King would cancel his program. They didn't follow through on it. Martin Luther King became worth more dead than alive, and very much so, and that's what happened. And Julia Brown was just a marvelous, marvelous American. I grew to love her. I was very close with her, and she's passed away as well.
And she wrote the book, I Testify, about her 9 years of undercover work for the FBI. With Charlie Smith, he loved the John Birch Society. And Evan, I'll just take a minute here and give it back to you. This is late 1990s in Dayton, Ohio. We're having a John Birch Society speech. And I was master of ceremonies. We were setting up for the speech. And it was interesting. A black family from the Dayton, Ohio area was having a family reunion. And our coordinator, Orville Starkey, comes up to me and he's talking to an elderly black gentleman, completely gray. And he said, "Tom, you remember this guy?" And I said, "My God, I do." I said, "Charlie, I thought I was seeing a ghost for a second." Bottom line was this, and then Will Grigg gave his speech, and it's about 90% over. Charlie Smith was sitting in the back of the room by the door next to me, and we heard a knock on the door, and it's a black lady. And I opened the door, and she said, "Can you please tell that gentleman to come out into this hall right now?" What had happened was, rather than go to his family reunion, Charlie Smith was attending a speech by the John Birch Society. And he was, needless to say, he was in the doghouse a little bit. Evan, I'll give it back to you.
I know the feeling of being in the doghouse for attending Birch meetings. Okay, so Neil Reddington asks, in what ways can we support and empower our local sheriff department over, it says ST police, so I guess city police may have been what Neil wrote. But don't answer that question yet, because I think there's another question that's similar here. Let's see here. Oh, Kathy Johnson asks, what is the best recommendations you can give to us for supporting our local police? People are on our side. People on our side have had two street rallies in, it looks like, Gega County, Ohio, and the response from the traffic and community passers by was 101 positive. So people are wanting to know how they can go about supporting their local police.
Well, there's two things you got to do. The first thing is, when you start a group like that, you go and you tell the police what you're doing. All right. Sit down with the chief of police and tell him, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. We're backing you people. And the police chief will be very happy about that. He'll spread that through his corps of policemen that he has. And then the next thing you do is you start going to the community leaders. You go to the business owners. Fellow owns a hardware store. Go talk to him about it, right? You don't want people looting your store. You don't want people breaking down the windows and doing this and that and everything else. We want to support our local police, and maybe even ask for a donation for some of the equipment that you need. And then set up a booth at the supermarket or outside the local post office or something like that. And pretty soon people will begin to wonder, is this John Birch Society stuff that you're pushing here? Absolutely. I have some of that here too. Yeah, take a pamphlet, take a DVD and find out more about the Birch Society. And that's the way to do it. And it works.
Yeah, Neil Reddington corrected me. He said that he meant ST police meant state police. So he wanted to know ways we can support and empower our local sheriff's department over state police. Keith Minner, he asked the question, how do we help make police chiefs comfortable to act in circumvention of a liberal mayor's orders to stand down when needing to protect life and property in the face of violent mobs?
Well, you've got a policeman who's a good man and you got a mayor who's a leftist. You got a problem. You got to start getting people to be aware of the fact that this mayor you have here needs to be replaced, right? And you can do that with a support your local police committee just by simply pointing out, here's the stance of the mayor, here's the stance of the police, and here's the stance of the local people and so forth. It works. Education is the key to getting better people in office at any level, right up to President of the United States.
John Mills asks where he can send a check for $20 to purchase Mr. McManus's book. So this book, The History of the John Birch Society.
Yeah, well,
P.O.
Box 3076 in Wakefield, Massachusetts. That's MA 01880. A check made out to me or a $20 bill, you'll get the book. It used to cost $30, but I've got a stash of them here. Not too many left. I'm running low, and that's good. So anybody who wants one, I'll be glad to send that off as soon as I hear from you.
All right. Well, I'm done being the stage manager, so I'll leave it to Tom to close this webinar event.
Okay. Well, thank you all for attending this webinar event. We greatly appreciate it. We're going to be doing additional broadcasts like this in the future. Please stay tuned. We greatly appreciate all you're doing in the Freedom Fight. Thank you again for being good, loyal members of the John Birch Society and Jack McManus and Evan. Thank you for all your help in putting this together. Folks, have a good evening.
Let me add to that. God bless everybody. Less government, more responsibility, and with God's help, a better world. The Birch Society is the way to go about getting that. And I salute all of you who are members. Thank you.